strap on your VR headset, because we're about to transport you into the captivating world of Ghosts of Tabor. Welcome to Tabor Radio. Hey, welcome to this episode of Tabor Radio. Today we're joined with one of the OG developers of Ghosts of Tabor. It's amazing that we've made it this far into the series of podcast episodes, and we're still getting one of the OGs.
Right.
So I'm excited for it. Today we're joined with Patty, fresh back from GDC as well. So, you know, thank you for joining us today. But before we get carried away, Patty, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit? Tell the listeners, I guess, your background, how you got introduced to Ghosts of Tabor.
Yeah, of course. So my background is I actually, like, a month or two after I graduated college, one of the old developers that was on the project to Bash, he went to the same college as me, and he introduced me to the team. So I got on to Ghosts of Tabor on a internship. And then after the internship, I got hired on full time to work on Ghosts of Tabor. So I've been working on Ghosts of Tabor for right around 20-ish months, a little more, but not exactly sure. But yeah, right around that amount of time. So I was a fresh graduate from college, went to Shawnee State University. No one's ever heard of it, so it's okay. But yeah. I graduated with a game programming degree. I'm one of the game developers on Ghosts of Tabor. Been on the project for a while. Know a little bit about it.
So, I mean, right off the bat, because Combat Waffle Studios, from the outside looking in, is just very super aggressive with how they get things done. So you're fresh out of college, and this is who you're going to work for. I mean, what's that? Did you expect to, like, look for a company that could be that fast-paced but still get the job done? Or was it just I like the concept of what they're doing so good, I don't care what speed we're working at, I just want to be part of it?
I honestly like the speed more that it's fast-paced. I like the idea that, like, everyone on the, like, there's no, like, one trick pony on the team. Everyone's able to do a little bit of everything. Some of us are better at other things than other people. Like, I'm terrible with materials. If there's a material on the project, I didn't touch it. And if I did, it's broken. But other than, like, there's little small things that everyone's able to do. I really like being fast paced. It also helped that it was, like, my first job out of college, so I'm a-okay with anything. Like, I was like, I want something. Like, so it was a great opportunity, and it's been doing me great for this long. So I'm very happy. Scott sent me to GDC last week, so, like, it's been really cool. Got to learn a lot of stuff at GDC. It was a lot of fun.
And you went to school for, you know, game development. How long have you known that, you know, this is what you want to do? You know, have you been making little games since you were a kid, you know?
So, funny thing is, I went to college without knowing how to program. So, I knew nothing. And I walked into college and I was like, yeah. So, like, it was my senior year of high school, and I was like, just any senior, had no idea what I was going to do. There was this person that came in to have a talk to this art class I was in, and the talk was about SCAD, which was another university, much more expensive than Shawnee. But the talk was basically about games and the games industry, and I've grown up playing games my whole life, like, play Pokemon on the Game Boy. I got a Game Boy right back there. Like, I played games all my life. And I saw that. It was never even, like, something that came on my radar. It wasn't, like, something I thought, oh, this is something I possibly could have done. And after that talk in high school, I looked into it, and I saw, oh, there's this college that's not too far away from me that has a technically, they're a renowned game programming degree, but I yeah, sure. I think it's I got to learn a lot. So it was nice, nice small class sizes. And so I came to college without knowing anything. My first year, ironically, when I went to that college, I was on like the art side of it. Like I was supposed to be doing like art, and I didn't really know that I signed up for the art side when I went to college. And when I got there, I was like taking equal classes of the art and the programming. And I was like, oh, I really like this programming stuff. And then I was talking to my advisor at the time, and I was like, oh, can I sign up for more of these programming classes? And they're like, you're in the wrong degree. So my first semester, I got to swap it to be on the programming side, went through all of that degree. Then right after graduation, got the internship opportunity through Bash, and then got to Combat Waffle.
That's wild.
So I got to know. It's your first day as an intern. You're excited, right?
Yep.
You're walking into Combat Waffle. I mean, what's that like? What's that feeling in you? Are you just ultra nervous? Are you like, it doesn't matter, I got this?
I was extremely nervous for mainly two reasons. My first day at Combat Waffle, I didn't have a VR headset. So that was a little nerve-wracking to like be like, oh, I'm going to work for this VR company. I don't even have VR yet. I was getting my VR headset. I was getting an Oculus Quest 2 from a friend of mine. I was supposed to get it like 2 days after I started my first day. So like the first day was just onboarding stuff. So like you're looking through documentation and like getting the project. But like it was really nerve-wracking to be like, oh, I can't test anything. So that was the number one thing. And then the other thing was like, when I graduated college, I didn't really know if I was good or not. Like I knew comparatively to other students, like I knew I had good grades, but like I didn't really know if I was going to make it or not. And I luckily did, but like I wasn't really sure. I never like had that, oh yeah, I know I'm going to do this. It was like, maybe I'm going to get fired, really.
Was there ever that feeling too of like, I am completely in over my head with this, or did things kind of just roll naturally?
There were a few times where I got assignments that I was like, I have no idea how to start this. But I wouldn't say there were any like times where I was like drowning. There were times where like I needed help to figure out where starting point was of the task. Like if there's like three parts of the task, I knew what the end product was supposed to look like, but I had no idea where I was supposed to start. And that's where like Ray and some of the older and more experienced developers came in and would be like, oh yeah, you need to start here, and then just work it through there. So a lot of learning experiences for sure.
I was gonna say 21 months later, now you're at GDC, the biggest, you know, game developer conference in the world, really.
Yeah, it was pretty insane. It was really cool going to GDC, and then like there was a VR like developers hub. It was cool getting to see a bunch of other VR developers, getting to talk to them, being like, "Oh, I played your game," and like being. It was just a cool experience. Really, really cool. That's all I can, like. Cool.
And you just happen to go in there representing Combat Waffles. So that makes it even a little cooler because the product is, you know, it can be backed up quite easily.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very, very cool. I don't have another word.
And were you the only one from the team there?
No. Zav also went. I believe his Discord name is Zav in there. But yeah, Zav, he also went to GDC with me. So that was really cool. He did a lot more research in all the talks than me, so it was nice having that one person that would be like, oh yeah, these are the things that are definitely going to be important for us to go to. So it helped me because I was not as prepared as I probably should have been when I walked in.
Was it just all the, I guess, the size? Any learning lessons that you know for hopefully next time?
I know for a fact that I should really, like, I had a bad problem of me looking at, like, the title of the talk and then, like, skimming the description. I really need to read the description next time, because, like, there were a few times I went into talks that I thought it was about one thing, and it ended up being about a completely different thing. And I was just like, did I, like, really mess up at reading that description? And then, like, after the talk, I would look at it and I'd be like, yep, I just can't read.
No, I have seen where some panels have, like, the big bold title for what you assume based on reading just the title it's going to be. But no, absolutely not. You start reading the description and realize this is something that I'm probably not going to want to hear. But yeah, that can be too late, because you also don't want to be that person just gets up after 5 minutes and walks right out, you know?
Yeah. Which is not like they're saying anything that isn't important. Like, it's all still good information to know. It just wasn't what I was expecting. Like, I don't think there were any of the talks I went to that I was just like, I didn't learn anything. And there were a few of them that were very art-based that weren't as helpful to me, because I don't know much about art. I'm not an artist. So that could have been better used time, but, like, it's not like I wasted time at all.
Well, and there's so many panels, too. I mean, you can spend your whole convention time just going from talk to talk to talk. So, I mean, it's hard also to select, like, with confidence that you've chosen all the best ones in the time slots. So fortunately, it always comes back the next year, and then there'll be more panels, more talks, and obviously more conventions to be had.
And just like college, at this point, you're much more hands-on involved with the programming side. That's your real passion.
Yeah, programming is, that's everything I like. That's what I enjoy. Getting to see a program that you made come together is, I don't know that there's anything better to, like, it's just everything. Getting to, like, look at trailers and stuff that Proper's done, and getting to see, like, oh, there's this, like, feature that I made. Getting to see that in a trailer and being like, oh, that's really cool. He made that look cool. And, like, there would be so many times that Proper's having to work with our features when they're not done yet. So they'll have this feature and, like, do something, and you'll see it in the trailer and be like, that's not intentional. Now that needs to be intentional.
Turning a bug into a feature, almost.
Yeah. There are quite a few. I can't think of any example off the top of my head, because of course not. But I remember, like, we would have some type of thing that would show up in one of the trailers that Proper would do, and then we would see it and be like, oh, well, we have to do that now. Actually, I'm trying to think. I think a collision between melee weapons happened because of Proper. Because he did on one of the trailers, he had it where, like, you're a gun and the John Wick sword, like, collided. And we didn't have that. Like, that wasn't a thing. So that had to get in because it was in the trailer. So that would be my first example of it. But it's definitely happened more than once.
And since you didn't have VR at all when you first, you know, got into it, and then you're getting the headset, you know, did you have any of those classic, I guess, you know, VR motion sickness, any hurdles like that in development, or were you pretty strong forward?
I was actually very lucky that I didn't, but it also wasn't the first time I've done VR. So, like, I've played VR before. My college actually had headsets you could rent for free, and you could just go in and use the headsets at any time, and they had different games you could play. So we used to go up to the college at, like, 1 a.m. and play Beat Saber for hours on end.
That's freaking wicked. Pretty cool.
Yeah, college, like, they actually had basically every game console that you could think of that you could just rent, and they had lots of games that you could play, and, like, you could rent, like, a PS1 and, like, play just random PS1 games, PS2, like, they had all of it was there. And it was really cool.
Look at that. It kind of did in a way, give you a little boost coming out of it, too. If you didn't have that experience, that might not have, you know.
Yeah, that is very true.
So that's really cool. And, you know, now that you're in VR, you're playing, are you still on a Quest standalone, or do you go PC VR these days?
So I normally play Ghost of Tabor Quest native, but I also play Ghost of Tabor a little differently than what, like, someone like who's actually playing the game would play it as, because, like, I don't play it for any progression. Like, the entire time I play, I'm hunting other people and, like, literally doing nothing else. Like, I remember on launch day, I was running into raids with a grenade in my hand, pulling the pin, and just running up to people and dropping a grenade. And I did that for hours at launch day. And I'm not really doing the Ghost of Tabor experience. I'm just kind of screwing around and seeing what happens.
Well, if it's fun, it's fun. And now, when you did the grenade,
how hard the laughter is, you know, most of the time when it happened, that had to be pretty funny.
Would you die 100% of the time? Or did you
I threw it right at my feet. I made sure I was going down. And the reason I pulled the pin was because if I die, I would drop the grenade. I was liking to use impact grenades. So right when it hit the ground, it would blow up and normally kill the other person that was with me. So I would just run into missile silo trying to get as close to the people as possible. And it worked pretty well. Didn't get credit for any kills because they would always be dead before, or like after I was dead. But like it was doing good.
And are you going in solo or with teammates?
Normally solo.
I say it doesn't sound like Patty's the one you want to go into a server when he's pointing a gun at you laughing, you know you're gonna get shot.
Yeah, in all of our playtests, I'm normally the one of the first people that kills my teammates.
and sorry, keep going.
And I'm known to just steal items from other people. So like if you have like a grenade on you, I'm known to pull the pin and put it back to you. So, and like if I find a grenade in Reed, I don't know what it is, but I have to pull the pin right when I see it. So like I open a loot crate, see a grenade, immediately pick it up, pull the pin, and I was like, oh, I have a live grenade now. What to do?
That's freaking hilarious.
Bringing the next level fun to the game. That's pretty cool.
I mean, how many hours would you say you're putting into Ghost of Tabor on a day between, you know, development's one thing, but just genuine, you know, playtime like that.
Normal playtime. So the issue is after we make a patch and I see a bug that we fixed, I can't continue I can play right when it comes out, and I can play like a decent amount of time for right when it comes out. But like after like we've kind of branched off of what's live to players and we fix bugs and stuff, and right when I encounter one, it really just like kills the experience for me. So like I normally right when a patch comes out, I play for a little bit, like a few hours or whatever here and there, but like I just it really kills it when I see some type of bug that I know we've already fixed, and it's just, it kills it for me. But there is a lot of playtesting when we're developing, which, of course, but, yeah.
Well, I'll give the studio a lot of credit on, A, finding the bugs before anybody else, recognizing, owning everything, never have once ever said, nah, you're all crazy, there's not a problem with this, but the ability to go in and fix it. And then at the same time,
not just fix it within like 24 hours in some instances.
Exactly. And then do it yet another update where the game gets even bigger, even better, more stuff added. And yes, there'll be some bugs, but again, there's just this aggressive. So I always picture like patch day or server wipe day, just everyone sitting in front of that keyboard waiting to pull up, to pull shit up and try to fix it if something should happen. But in all honesty.
So when we were first doing our patches, we had a bad habit of doing a patch at like right before we were going to sleep or whatever. So we make a patch wake up and just see the world on fire. And then we're like, oh no, we got to fix this now. So like now we're in the habit of having fish deploy the patches like early our time. So it's normal time for fish. He's in, I don't know what country he's in right now. He's somewhere in a different time zone. But so he does normally a really early patch. So we wake up, we see, oh, there's these problems. And then normally I would say probably half the team is working on bug fixes and the other half is still continuing to work on new features or making their features not, what's the correct way? Make their features less buggy. Let's go with that.
Fair enough.
And it sounds like the bug hunting, it sounds like that's like a big, I don't want to use the word passion, because it's not like a...
Oh, we've talked to people that just love breaking, trying to break a game.
Yeah, you know, but so. Is that like your number one focus when you go, when you see something, you're like, what's broken right now?
So I really, like, when I see a bug, like, I'm kind of not really like in focus to it. Like I see the bug, you know, like, oh, that's probably just a feature that's an issue, like an in progress feature right now. Really when I know that bug is an issue is when Mikael goes and is like, hey, we're getting this feedback. This is an issue. And then I know, oh, okay, we need to fix this. So a lot of it is coming from Mikael. That's when I know I need to actually fix a bug. Another person is Scott, of course. If he goes and says, hey, this is an issue, that becomes number one priority, fix that immediately. I'm normally not the one finding the bug unless it's in a feature that I'm currently working on. Then yes, I'll find the bug, but normally I'm told, hey, there's a bug here, fix it.
Yeah, I give Mikael a lot of credit. Not only with the Discord, the official Facebook group as well. It's like I'm seeing him respond.
He's
to,
everywhere.
Yeah, it's crazy. People will tag him and stuff in the group, and other times they don't even tag him, and boom, I still see him commenting and saying, hey, have you tried this? Or, hey, send me a message. You know, we'll get some info on it. The guy's been working hard since launch.
24 hours a day, yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And what's things been like for the studio since, you know, things launched, since the game launched on the official MetaQuest store?
It's been really good. We've been just a lot of working on some new up-and-coming features, some just cool updates that are coming. Can't really talk. I don't really know what I'm allowed to talk about, so I'm just not going to say anything.
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah, that's probably the safest path.
Yeah, the Scott Fist of Doom coming down.
Yeah, it's not like I don't really know what I'm supposed to say or not say, so I'm just don't know.
Yeah, no, that's
more coming in some capacity has always been the assumption, but what that is, we're patient for. It's always just good knowing that, like,
The beast never sleeps.
No. The studio's hustling on top of other projects. And
yeah. Speaking of which, have you tried either of the two other projects that Combat Waffle's working on? Being Grim or Silent North?
I have not tried Silent North. But I've seen a lot of Spoon playing Grim. I have not tried Grim either, though. So...
That makes me feel a little bit better that I haven't hopped in either, knowing that, you know, one of the developers of Ghost of Tabor has not hopped in Rust, or hopped into Grim.
Grim. Freudian Grim slip.
Yeah. No, we're big on Grim. I cannot wait for that one.
Yeah. I bug Spoon now and then, respectfully.
So your development time is focused 100% on Ghost of Tabor?
Yep, 100% of my time goes to Ghosts. There's nothing else.
That's awesome. That was something that was said, you know, when the games were first being announced, you know, Grim and Silent North. It was like, hey, look, the teams that are working in Ghost of Tabor, that's going to be the team for Ghost of Tabor. It's just going to be new teams brought on for those other projects. It's good to hear that that's remaining true. It's like, no, you're focused. you know, 100% on Ghost of Tabor.
Yep. I don't even have the Silent North project, and I definitely don't have Grim project. So, like, yeah, literally all my focus is only on Ghost of Tabor.
Which that's awesome.
We also have multiple people only focus on Ghost of Tabor. We have people only focused on Silent North, and Spoon has his team as well.
That's awesome. And have you gotten to visit the new studio down in Florida
yet? Not yet.
Are you going to be making a trip in the future?
Oh, I definitely will, but that's also because I'm moving there, so
nice.
We'll see it at some point.
That'll make it pretty easy.
Yeah, that's awesome. What a journey these last 2 years have been for you.
This is like an amazing story.
Yeah.
If you look at it from like, I'm a college kid, you know, took the wrong course, straightened it. I mean, got an internship for this studio, happened to be around, you know, Scott calls them unicorns, if I remember correctly, but it's true. And he does also have that talent for knowing individual talent. So to be picked by him or whomever to be given the opportunity to work for that studio, if you want validation of, I wonder if I'm good at what I do. It's like that to me speaks for itself. Everyone on there, absolutely over the top.
Yeah, it really is an amazing story. Fresh out of college, right? Into Combat Waffle Studios. Is there a
VR game of the year?
Yeah.
It's a good story.
Yeah, 100%. And do you have a favorite map that you play in? I was always big on Island. I didn't think that there could be a map that would take it over. Yeah, Maka Underground is something special.
Yeah.
But for yourself, do you have a favorite?
Favorite map. So the thing is, I recently just learned the layout to Maka, like just normal Maka. I've been struggling to, like, we do playtests on that map all the time, and I get lost 100% of the time. and like I join in with a squad and they're like, oh, we're going to museum or we're going cathedral or whatever. And I was just like, I'm at the roadwork. that's about it. And for a really long time, I didn't know no matter what turn I took, I always got to the roadwork and I was just always so confused. But I recently learned that map. So that is my favorite map. Also, the Collector. So can't really not say the Collector. So it's the best map just because there's a guy that literally collects body parts. So like, come on, come on.
It's the small things like that. Even Mach Underground, man, when we first went into it,
I was taken away. Oh, great. That's a good map.
Yeah, but we got lost when we first went in.
I still get lost. I don't know why. If you put me in the map and say, go to the bunker right now, I will get there. But it's not going to be the shortest route. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of,
we died of hunger.
Turn back.
We starved to death.
Yeah.
Trying to make it to the exit. It was terrible.
But it's one of the few maps that I try to hang as long as we can in there.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't always work out.
20 NPC kills.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, when you're not kamikazing yourself, when you're not running in and blowing yourself up with grenades, do you have an ideal loadout for yourself? You know,
grenades,
and grenades. Backpack full of grenades.
So my ideal loadout... So I'm really poor in the game. So normally it's whatever I can buy, and it tends to be like a really cheap pistol and a grenade. And like if I run out of ammo with the pistol, then I'm defaulting back to grenade mode. So try to keep a nice low ammo pistol on me at all times because don't want to not give someone a gift that is great and explosive.
I love to hear that you all don't let the developers cheat. It's not like you're loading yourself up with 30 million.
Not going to lie.
It's painful.
I'd want to see the little forever symbol, you know?
In dev environments, we have like max levels and everything, so like we're able to like do whatever we want. But right when we go into production, we're just as poor as everyone else, unfortunately.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, because I already know the way your brain works. You're like, no,
we would be- Scott giving out the weekly, you know, billion code. Here's the here's your billion.
I'm sure that there is some developers that talk to, because it, you would have to go through Fish and to be able to get the money, and like I'm sure there's someone that annoys Fish enough to, that it'll be like, sure, you can have some money, but like most people know.
Let's just say it's best not to annoy Fish. No, I'm just kidding. Jonas, he seemed like a really nice guy when we interviewed him.
Oh, get your email, you log in, you find out you're negative.
Oh, that we had a, so we used to cheat in crypto wallets. So like we could like spawn in a crypto wallet. And at one point, Zav puts too much money on the crypto wallet. So if you sold it on, I think it was PC, you went negative a billion Karuna. And when you're negative, you can't buy or sell. Like you're just out of luck. So like, we would like give them, we were like, oh yeah, you can use this on Quest Native, and we give them to people for in the dev environment to like make it so they have money and stuff, and like we completely screwed over some of our QA tests which just made it so they couldn't buy anything.
that's hilarious. Do you have any other good, I guess, goldies of like that, good stories of things gone wrong? Nothing like, you know, game breaking where it, I guess, you know, no, not the panic waking up at 3 a.m. moments, but just funny ones like that.
Other good little tidbits like that. I remember there was this bug on, I want to say, when you would unholster a gun and let go of it, it would lose all gravity. So you could, like, fling it against a wall and it would like bounce around and it would never come to the ground. So like it would just, you could like bounce it against things. It just didn't have gravity. That was a fun one. There were other ones. Oh, the loot crates. So there was a great bug that I loved where you could stand on a loot crate and one of your friends could grab the loot crate lid and fling it up. And you would just shoot in the air. And you would go, like, really far. But you didn't die when you hit the ground. So, like, it was pretty cool. So that used to be a quick way that we used to traverse the map. Was we would fling each other with the loot crates.
That's so, like one of those, you're sad when it's gone. Like, you know you gotta fix it.
You know there's somebody that's going to, anytime they see a loot crate, they're going to stand on it.
And just to see if maybe it came back.
Maybe this one got mixed. You never know.
Yeah. But there were also some fun ones with Reconnect where you would be dead and you would reconnect and then you would be looking at your dead body. And there was one time where 100% of the time when you would reconnect, your player would just be dead. So like it didn't matter if you were alive before. When you would reconnect, you'd just be looking at your ragdoll body on the ground and you couldn't, like, literally were locked in the game. You couldn't do anything. You had to hard close the game to even get out. That was a real fun one when I was working on the reconnect system. I was like just going through a bunch of random bugs like that. There was another one with Reconnect. There, at one point, if you were holding a gun in your hand and you disconnected, and if someone else went and grabbed that gun, and when you reconnect, your hand would be still attached to that gun that's in someone else's hand, and like your hand would be like freaking out for you. And then you could walk around and break your pawn so that you would walk outside of your body, but your body would still be in the other place. So there, a lot of the bugs were just like out of body experiences where you're getting to look at your player and being like, oh, that's not intended.
I think this is good for people to hear that it's like a feature, like the Reconnect feature, which you're talking about, the one that if you act like something happens, you crash out, that you can join back into the live game, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like to add a feature like that, it's going to be bugs in every which way, and it's a lot of work to add something like that.
So many bugs with that. We had an issue where you didn't drain stamina when you would reconnect, you didn't take damage. We had issues where, like, your controllers, so, like, let's say you have a hand pitch offset or something, like, you have just different settings with your controllers. It wasn't saving any of those settings, like, when you would reconnect. So, like, just things that you would expect to be working, just not working. There was a nice bug where every time you would reconnect, you were locked into a snap turn. You couldn't switch it to smooth. So there are other things, you were locked into not head-based movement. You were stuck with the controller one. Like, there are a lot of bugs with Reconnect. So many bugs.
I think every gamer, we're guilty of it too, of like, oh, I wish this game had this. I mm-hmm. wish it had that. But it's like,
all the time.
To add anything, it's a lot of...
Well, there could be that domino effect too, that one thing on the front end just wrecks things on a... You know,
so yeah. Why is that all of a sudden not working?
Yeah, all the time. Like, you'll look at it and try and add like one small thing. You'll be like, this should be like super simple, quick fix. And then when you do it, you're just like, I've been doing this for 6 hours today, and I'm still not done. Maybe it wasn't a quick fix.
So, like the reconnect feature, a feature like that, you know, how long does that take to implement?
It's kind of hard to give estimates on how long it took because it's not the only thing I was working on during that time. Like, I'm just going to say a safe estimate of I was working on it for probably 3 weeks to a month, maybe, of just, but you also have to keep in mind for like Reconnect, I have to have a server, like a local server, for me to even like use it and stuff. So like a lot of that is build times. There are a lot of issues that you had to have multiple players. So I was having to make like QA builds, getting like Mikael to come in with me. And like, so it, again, I could be overestimating that drastically, just because of the fact that we, like, it's not the only thing I was working on at that time. There were other issues when another issue comes in that, because, like, that was a new feature that wasn't in at all. So, like, if there was a bug in any of my other features that came in, I had to put Reconnect in on the back burner, fix the bug in a feature that I actually already shipped. So, like, it's hard to give time estimates on how long it actually took.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Yeah, there's a lot going on, I'm sure, in the development of Ghost of Tabor at any given time.
Oh my God, yeah. It doesn't stop.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think that there's, you know, the game's in, it's not full release. Yeah, I don't think that it'll ever really can be. I mean, look at how it's constantly growing. I mean, what's a finished Ghost of Tabor product? I don't think it exists.
The only one that could answer that question.
Yeah, I don't think that there is a finish. You know?
It's got one of the strongest communities in VR that you'll ever see. One of the most mm-hmm. passionate communities to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Most insane Discord.
Are you in the Discord a lot, interacting with people, or is it just a little too much activity?
It's a lot. It's, if you send a like any message in that Discord, like, you just get blown up, and like, I try not to.
Well, it's you know, it's not the game it was 21 months ago, we'll mm-hmm. say, the community size or anything like that. What did that game look like when you first came in? You know,
there wasn't a game. Like, we didn't, like, when I first got on, we didn't have a game loop. Like, you couldn't play Ghost of Tabor. There was no, like, you would go into a map, which at that time we didn't even have a map. We didn't have Missile Silo. We didn't have any map. So, like, you were on a dev level. I don't remember if you could even take damage back then. Maybe you could. I'm not 100%. I think you could. Back then, we had two guns, maybe three. It was the AKM and the Glock 17. And there might have been another one. Maybe the MP5. No, the MP5 was after. We had two guns. There was no AI. There wasn't much there. There was a lot there, but not much that you would there wasn't a game yet. It's there was a lot of structures. We had a whole weapon system and all these other different systems, but no one could play it. If you were someone like downloaded that back then, you there wasn't really there wasn't something there. I think the only thing was the safe house level, which it was the safe house level multiple safe houses ago. So not the old bunker that you all know, but the bunker. I don't know if you guys even knew that bunker, but there was a bunker before that bunker. And then there was also a bunker before that bunker. I don't know if anyone ever I don't know if we ever released any update with that original bunker or not. But.
No, the first bunker I ever saw was the one that's now in Underground Maka.
Oh yeah, there's
that's the one that came with Apple.
That.
That's the one that was after the when it hit Apple App. That was the same bunker, wasn't it?
Yep. So there's multiple before that. Oh yes. Man, jeez. I hope one day we get a little nostalgic throwback to that.
Well,
that
not many waffle. People would even know.
Yeah, you'd have to put some sort of reference to it, some sort of indicator to know.
Yeah, if you saw it, you wouldn't, because the only real people that would know would be the people that were in that alpha channel. I forget what the correct name of it is, but we had QA testers that were early accessed that could play our game, and they had a bunker before the bunker that you guys know of, and then there was a bunker before that that I don't think, and I wasn't even on the project when that bunker was around, so I don't know that anyone would know that that exists other than developers. And then the other bunker, that one people would know, but very few people would know.
And could you already see the potential with the game, even that little shell?
Yeah, of course. We had Scott, who had a very clear what he wanted. Back then, literally, when we would make a feature, I remember the very first feature I ever made that wasn't just setting up a gun was setting up a gun, but with a custom feature on it, which was the MP5. No, it was the AWM. It was the bolt on the AWM. I had to set up a custom feature to get the bolt to work, so you could rotate it and slide it back and insert rounds. So that was the first feature I ever did on Ghost of Tabor, was the AWM bolt action gun. And then after that, it was the MP5, I believe. Maybe.
I hope so. It's one of my favorite close quarters guns. Absolutely.
Yeah. I remember, actually, I think it was MP5, because I remember Scott sent me a video of his actual MP5, where he was showing how you can slap the bolt on it, and he's like, "I want this in the game where you can slap it." And he was showing, because I remember, because I know nothing about guns, literally nothing. And so he was showing me these different, when I was set up a gun, I had this 20 questionnaire that I would just send to Scott on Discord and be like, hey, what chamber, like, what rounds does this shoot? Like all these different things. Be like, oh, is it an open bolt gun? Does it have single shot, full auto, semi-auto? Like, what does this gun do? And remember sending those to Scott. It got so bad that Scott bought me a game so that I wouldn't have to ask him as many questions. And yeah, so I remember setting up a lot of guns that and just essentially being like, hey, I don't know how this thing works, but I can ask Scott.
And was that like an educational gun game or what
yeah,
was
yeah,
that?
It was educational. It was World of Guns. It's a game where you can like disassemble guns and like put them back together.
Yeah.
So it was very
on Steam.
Yeah. Do you have it?
I
know
I
you love
say
those.
It's in my library because I remember playing it and I was impressed with the fact. Yeah. Like Patty said, you can dismantle everything on the gun, lay it out. So you
was it actually helpful? Like did it?
Oh yeah, yeah. Like there's so much information that I would never know, but I can know because of World of Guns.
So at this point, would you say that you're have a very comfortable understanding of a whole bunch of guns that you know?
Yeah,
2 years ago, you would be in the dark about.
2 years ago, I wouldn't have known anything. Like I can look at guns in our game and be like, "Oh, I know what gun that is." Like I can, like 2 years ago, if I saw an MP5, I wouldn't have known that it's named an MP5. Like I knew it was a gun. I know easily like 70 guns in our game. Like if I see them, I can like, oh yeah, I know it's that gun. I know it's, and I know how they work because of the game, because of setting them up. Like a lot of the gun stuff that I did was setting up like new logic for them. So like with the LMGs, I was the one that set up the new like belt logic for putting in the belts and stuff. I'd set up like the bolts on the bolt actions and just like new custom logic for guns. And then Eli would come in and make the gun not like someone who's never touched a gun set it up. So like he made it like actually feel good. So like he set up recoil and all these other things, damage values. And so that was Eli making someone who's never touched a gun make a gun that seems fine.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, that's quite the system. It's worked. I mean, look at the end result.
Yeah, it's worked great.
And since then, have you gone shooting ever in real life?
I have not. We were supposed to, I was supposed to go, it was like a few months after I got hired on. I was supposed to go with a few people, but I don't remember what happened, but it just didn't work out. And then since then, I have not.
Do you think you would feel comfortable with all of your knowledge just from the game, or would you feel like, whew, let me ask Scott some questions?
It like John Wick, man. He's going to crawl through.
I feel more like I would want to ask questions. Like, as comfortable as I could be with like knowing how the gun works in a game, I feel like it's a little different.
Yeah, 100. It's always better safe than sorry.
Although I'll tell you, I mean, these guns load like the real thing. If you game or no game, if you put the MP5 there and said load it, you'd know how to load it. You'd know how to how to make it shoot. You know whether you want to shoot single bullets or semi-automatic. So I mean, there is some educational value to loading all these different guns. Not that you're ever going to stumble upon a cache full of like, like the glory hole of armament, but you never know, you know?
Yeah, that is very true.
And something I love to ask everybody from the team that we get on, do you have any tips for...
This might not be the person to ask this.
Well, he's going to say run at them with a grenade, but do you have any tips for new players or struggling players to Ghost of Tabor?
I would say you should definitely go to my favorite place on the map, which is the Gore Pit on Island of Tabor, and just make sure that your body adds to the pile, is all I would say.
If there's ever a place to die, I guess that's where the pile of dead bodies are.
Yeah, of course. You gotta help. Like,
yeah, Island of Tabor is a special map for sure. Except I didn't think that there would ever be a map that surpassed it for me, but Underground Maka, I just get so many.
I'll always have love for Island.
Yeah, it's the OG map but for me.
Lately.
Come on.
Yeah, I know.
Couple dozen NPC kills. Can't walk away from that.
No, I know. I just
too much XP.
I like the sometimes I like the open air and the ability to stalk or this one. I mean, it's a great map though. I can't disagree with you at all. So
yeah, you know,
lately it's been the go to, and we haven't looked back. So what can I say?
Yeah. So you know, Patty, I know you're hard at work on Ghost of Tabor. We appreciate you taking the time to join us fresh after a work day too. And not only that, fresh after coming back from GDC. I think you were saying before we went on air, your flight was delayed. Had the classic journey back from a gaming convention.
So. Yeah. I got home 10 hours later than what I was supposed to.
Yeah. That's always the, like I said, the classic.
Well, the worst part is conferences can be tiring in themselves, right? Whether it doesn't matter what side you're on, vendor, consumer.
Between walking, probably malnourishment. Our first year we
dehydration.
First year we did PAX, we didn't even eat our first day.
No.
Well, until like 8 p.m., you know.
And then you're...
I made sure I ate every time I could.
No, that's smart. We actually learned like there's some convention etiquette of some rule of food to water ratio that you should always consume to keep the immune system up. Never seen it in my life until this past weekend. But I can only imagine just like you're on your way home, you're excited, and then fucking 10-hour delay would do it for mm-hmm. me. I'd lose it.
And then right when you get there, you got, you know, us two. Hey, Patty.
Hey, welcome home.
Yeah, you ready?
Got an hour to talk?
Yeah, so besides all of your hard work on Ghost of Tabor, besides the travels to GDC, then you get to come talk to us. So definitely appreciate you taking the time. But before we let Patty go, did you have anything else you wanted to ask him today?
Honestly, I've yet to hear a story from anyone on the team that wasn't great, but this one's going to stand out a little because mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people who want to go into the gaming industry. They, you know, they might not know, can I make it? You know, what do I do? I mean, you're living proof that, you know, you went to college and internshiped, and to me, like, won the freaking lottery, to be honest mm-hmm. with you, to score a good company. But it does show that people can do it. It's not a made up story. It's like you're living proof of it. So I'm just anxious to see like 20 years from now. Yeah. What the hell is Patty going to be working on? What game's he going to come up with?
Well, this is huge experience, no doubt. And, you know, one last question that, you know, I would regret if I didn't ask it. It's probably tough between all the time that you're spending developing in Ghost of Tabor and also playing. But now that you work in VR, is there other VR games that you're playing as well?
A lot of the VR games that I play, I'm playing for a very specific reason of Scott likes a feature and wants me to get to know that feature very well. So I would say a lot of the VR games that I play are me like figuring out how a feature works and seeing if I can use that. A game that I do play in my spare time is Gorn, where it's just an arena.
Gorn's pretty funny. A classic one.
Yeah, so I like playing that. Blades and Sorcery. I can't speak. But that's another one. I like playing a lot of those arena kill
sandbox games. Get your aggression out games.
No, Gorn's a good. I haven't heard Gorn brought up in a long time. So yeah, that made me smile to hear it.
Nice bendy, wonk 'em everywhere gameplay. Yeah,
that one, a little workout in.
That one's a classic for sure. All right, and I completely understand. A little tongue tied after, you know, GDC is a big day for people unaware. You know, that's like the It was like the gaming convention for game developers. It's called Game Developers Conference
for a reason.
For sakes, but yeah, it's quite a big one. Was that your first time out to California as well?
Yes, it was. It was interesting, for sure.
Yeah, from Kentucky to California, I'm sure is quite the
difference. The change.
Yeah. So before we wrap this up,
maybe
anything?
Someone will come to PAX East sometime.
Yeah, we're big on trying to push VR developers to PAX East. Selfishly, because we're in Massachusetts, PAX East is in Boston. That's a different conversation. But hey, it's a big gaming convention. There's not that much of a VR scene last 2 years.
Imagine if Ghost of Tabor had
it. It would be ridiculous.
Or Silent North.
It'd be ridiculous.
Or Grimm.
Ridiculous.
Or all three.
It would be ridiculous. I know that they were showing off Ghost of Tabor at GDC, right?
There was a booth that people could play Ghost of Tabor. It was through Meta. Meta was showing off different games. I think it was on Thursday that we had a section that you could play Ghost of Tabor.
Nice. Were you able to check it out at all? Like watch people playing at all or just too much going on?
Yeah. I got to check it out a little bit, but there were also talks going on that I wanted to go to. So that was a lot of what we were doing.
Nice. That's a hell of a game to just try out on the floor. And like,
what do you think? They'd probably have the 2 hour wait.
Oh, at PAX?
At PAX
Easy.
East, yeah.
Easy.
It'd be a 2 hour.
Yeah. Which it was also a lot of people's first experience in VR. And I would not say Ghost of Tabor is the first experience that a lot of people are looking at.
That could be a tough one.
Was the reception positive or was it a little intense for some people?
I believe it was pretty positive, but I also wasn't really
hovering in. Yeah. You weren't like making notes with the notepad. Well, you know, Tommy over there, Tommy smiled at 2 minutes in.
No, it was not too
attentive on that. I get that.
Yeah, no, Patty was there to absorb the knowledge.
Yeah, no, that's
sucking
a lot of
the knowledge.
For a game developer, man, there's a lot that they can learn from a weekend like that. So great stuff. Thank you again for joining us. And before we let you go, is there anything you want to say for the Ghost of Tabor community of, geez, however many tens
millions.
Of, yeah.
The millions and millions.
I would say 70, 80,000, whatever, but it's going to change by the time the episode drops. So it just it goes up too fast.
I would say you should try bringing in a grenade into your next raid and just seeing how it feels to drop it at your feet. I think you'll find it's a much more entertaining way of playing the game than you will think.
We're going to see a wave of suicide bombers. You know, after this episode drops, call it the Patty, the Fierce Patty. Ah, where does the name Fierce Patty, where does that name come from?
So it was a name that I used in college for, I played esports for Hearthstone. And it was just like my Xbox name. And after I got onto the esports team, it kind of really stuck. And a lot of people just called me Patty. And that kind of just stayed since.
And were you like a kind of always an like competitive gamer, or is it just Hearthstone that got you good?
I normally played game, like I don't really play games very seriously, as you could tell with my suicide grenade idea. I really picked up Hearthstone because it's going to sound bad, but I wanted priority registration and I could get it if I was on an esports team. So I could sign up for the classes I wanted to in college.
Genius.
So I joined.
You do what you got to do.
I joined the esports Hearthstone team, which we actually won quite a few like games. I've won more money. Like I've won more money than I've spent on Hearthstone, which is, I think, a pretty good system.
Hey, if you can make money off of a game, more money off of a game than you spent,
that should go on a resume. I'd put that right there at the top of my resume. You want to know how good I am at getting shit done? I'll find a way.
Yeah.
don't get it twisted. I will find a way.
That's awesome. So we'll let you go for net for real this time. Like I said, I know, crazy weekend and
we have
everything
a tendency to do that.
Yeah,
hold people for way over an hour.
It's a New England thing. We're talkers. But we got the podcast up. So thank you again, Patty, for joining us. Stay tuned for the next episode of Tabor Radio, the first of every month. you know, as we meet the team and find out the, you know, what's going on
and backstory.
Yeah, what's going on with Ghost of Tabor. So for the listeners, if you enjoy the episode, subscribe. That's the easiest way to get the next episode, you know, ASAP. You know, rate the podcast 5 stars on your favorite podcast platform and check you out next time. Ciao, ciao.
Take care.